lost everything they own.
40 people lost their lives. I'm Dave Anthony, Fox News. After more than 50 tornadoes hit 10 states over the weekend, this man barely got out of his house in time in Alabama.
A few minutes after we left and got up there that it hit, and it just destroyed it.
Fox's Steve Harrigan's is in another Alabama community hit hard, Winterboro.
You can hear those chainsaws in the background. It's certainly a tough scene to look at when you drive by these destroyed houses.
And he's standing in front of a school that got twisted apart.
It pretty much got leveled by a tornado, actually threw a school bus on top of that school. Volunteers have taken it down. A lot of the volunteers we've seen helping with the cleanup and recovery are actually students at this high school, which was destroyed.
The Trump administration is defending the weekend deportations a federal judge had ordered halted.
The actions of President Trump made this country safer.
Border czar Tom Holman tells Fox.
And we removed over 200 violent criminals from the United States.
The president calls the illegal immigration surge during the Biden years an invasion, so this is a time of war, and he invoked the Alien Enemies Act of 1798.
This wartime authority gives the president the power to deport non-citizens without a judicial hearing. The act has only been invoked three other times in American history. On Saturday, a federal judge ordered the Trump administration to stop the deportations to see if its invocation was legal. But the White House says two planes carrying alleged Venezuelan gang members were already in international airspace when the judge's ruling came down, so they argue they did not defy a court order.
Fox's Madeline Rivera. Tomorrow, President Trump will talk to Russia's leader, trying to get Vladimir Putin to agree to a ceasefire to end the war in Ukraine. The president said last night they'll discuss possible terms.
We'll be talking about land. We'll be talking about power plants. That's a big question.
The Chicago River's dyed green, a color many Americans are wearing today, celebrating St. Patrick's Day, the nation's biggest parade starting now in New York City. A few million people expected to be there. America's listening to Fox News.
You've heard me talk about Relief Factor and how many people enjoy a better, more pain-free life because of it, including me. If you're dealing with everyday pain, it makes sense you want to try it first. Well, Relief Factor makes that pretty pain-free as well with their three-week quick start for only $19.95. But Relief Factor is an easy, affordable way to see how it could literally change your life. Relief Factor is a daily supplement that fights pain naturally, developed by doctors. Relief Factor doesn't just mask the pain temporarily. It reduces or eliminates pain. In fact, the longer you take it, the more effective it is. Trying it couldn't be easier with their three-week quick start for $19.95, less than a dollar a day. Just takes one phone call, 1-800-4-RELIEF, 1-800-4-RELIEF. Wherever you're having pain, every day you feel better is a day you live better. Try Relief Factor's three-week quick start today. ReliefFactor.com. Call 1-800-4-RELIEF, 1-800-4-RELIEF.
From the News 11 Information Desk, I'm Zachary Moran-Norris. This weekend, the skies over Yuma were alive with excitement at the 59th Annual Yuma Air Show. Thousands gathered at Marine Corps Air Station Yuma to witness heart-pounding aerial performances, from breathtaking aerobatics to powerful F-35 demonstrations. Spectators were treated to world-class aviation, celebrating the incredible skill of military aviators and the rich aviation heritage of Yuma. And if you're heading out of town this summer and want someone to keep an eye on your vacation home, well, you're in luck. Volunteers for the Yuma County Sheriff's Office will be able to provide home security checks all for free. Since many winter visitors will be traveling for the summer, YCSO says volunteers can help protect homes while homeowners are away. And lastly, local tribes gathered for a special ceremony honoring Native teen Emily Pike. The 14-year-old was found dead a month ago in Globe after she was reported missing in Mesa. The Kitson and Kokopah tribes hosted the ceremony at the Ocean to Ocean Bridge, where they released rose petals at 6 p.m. Catch us on News 11 tonight at 5, 6, and 10 p.m. for your latest local news, weather, and sports.
It's been a real journey since 2014 when I first had my injury. I realized that my home was just not working for me and that it was time to ask for help. Homestar Troops is really giving me my life back. The shower allows me to go in and turn around with my chair, pull down storage racks, automated door systems, hours of my morning given back to me. Adaptive sports are a huge part of my life, a huge part of my healing journey as well. Homestar Troops helped with making sure that I had a home gym so that I can continue to train. This past year, I was able to host Thanksgiving in my home. And it was the first time I was able to have my whole family in one place, and I was able to contribute to the meal. There are a lot more veterans in need, and Homes for Our Troops is going to be there to help them too.
Homes for Our Troops builds and donates specially adapted custom homes nationwide for severely injured post-9/11 veterans and enables them to rebuild their lives. Join our mission at hfotusa.org.
You know your business needs to get in the digital game. Marketing on the internet, and maybe finally fixing your website. Don't let the world pass you by. Go to YumaAdvertising.com. That's YumaAdvertising.com. They're part of the Desert Southwest's largest media company, and their team has executed thousands of digital marketing campaigns across the country. Digital campaigns for businesses just like yours. Who knew they needed to get in the game? YumaAdvertising.com. That's YumaAdvertising.com. Don't let the world pass you by.
Can't ask for a better week of weather than what we have planned for this week. 82 and partly sunny today, 52 overnight tonight for St. Patrick's Day, 74 and sunny tomorrow, 53 tomorrow night, sunny and 76 on Wednesday, 83 and sunny on Thursday.
The following program on 560 KBLU is a paid program. All opinions expressed by the program participants are solely their current opinions and do not reflect the opinions of 560 KBLU, Eldorado Broadcasters, LLC, their respective parent companies or affiliates, or the companies with which the program participants are affiliated and may have been previously disseminated by them. The program participants' opinions are based upon information they consider reliable, but neither 560 KBLU, Eldorado Broadcasters, nor its affiliates, nor the companies with which such participants are affiliated, warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such.
Welcome to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by the law firm of Deason, Garner, and Hanson, hosted by attorneys Sean Garner and Adam Hanson.
So Carson, this show is Life, Death, and the Law. We do it weekly, just flexibility to travel and do different things. And so I'm excited to hear what you do. So if you just give a brief introduction, who you are, what you do, where you came from, the life story.
Yeah, so grew up in Yuma. I went on a mission when I was 18 to South Africa and was there for 10 months, and then I came home and went to Utah, went to school at UVU, and I wasn't really sure what I wanted to do. I changed my major like three different times, went from like biology to biotechnology to psychology. And
thinking you're going to go into some medical field or?
Yeah, I was like, maybe I'll be like some kind of physician, a doctor, like pediatrician or something.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, maybe I'll be a psychiatrist, you know, because those seem like practical things that you're also helping people, so they seem meaningful. But I didn't really like traditional school. I ended up not going that route in the end. And during that time, I had like a few different jobs, just like working in like a treatment center for kids with autism. And
really? So what did you do there? Like, how did you assist?
Yeah, I was like a mentor, essentially. Like, it was an inpatient facility, so I would like wake them up, get them out of bed, and facilitate their day, you know.
How old were these kids?
So these are like teens, and there's kind of high functioning kids with autism. So they were, a lot of them were like really creative, really smart, and interesting people. So it was like super rewarding, but also really stressful because they all have their different quirks, you know.
Yeah, they're super smart, so you can't like, you know, tell them exactly what to
they're
do.
They're good at faking it sometimes, you know. Like I had someone like that I was watching, like, pretend to have a heart attack, and I just...
Really?
Yeah, he collapsed just on the ground, like, clutching his heart, and then other people around, like, oh, are you okay? I'm just ignore him. Don't give him attention.
Just ignore him.
Yeah. Yeah, so that was an interesting time in my life. It was kind of just exploring. I wasn't sure what I wanted to do, but that's the kind of thing I like to do because it was meaningful, you know? Like, I felt like I was, like, directly helping people. And I had a couple other interesting jobs. Like I worked at Lowe's and then I worked at a pawn shop.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they just bring in like random stuff. Like half the time it's something that they stole and they're trying to, you know, it's an interesting group of people. It's the people that come into a pawn shop. You know, and then it was useful too because, you know, you could practice like negotiating and like getting the best deal type of thing.
So, and did the owner of the pawn shop leave that up to you to, like, figure out what was a good enough price to settle on for the item, or was that something that you just kind of witnessed as you worked there?
Yeah, you have some discretion. Like, you can haggle to what you think is right, but most of the items, there's a limited set of items that we can take, so you check in the system, like, what do we normally sell this for?
Mm-hmm.
You just haggle based on that.
Were they, a lot of times, because the pawn shop whole idea is, I just need some money right now. I want to have my item back, but I'm going to give it to you as collateral for this short-term loan. Then when I pay back the loan, I'll get my item back. Is that still the concept today, or are they coming in just to sell something to get quick cash?
Half the time, yeah, they're pawning, but half the time they're selling as well.
Okay.
A lot of people will say they're pawning, but then they just never come back for it. So yeah, you still have to be aware of that.
And you give them the same price either way, right? You're not going to give them more for a pawn than you would for a sale, because
you will if they have like a good history. So if
okay,
they're coming in a lot. Some people like bring in like the same items and then they get it back. Like they'll bring in like their whole EC setup or just some like random valuable thing and then come back for it. So
what happens when the police show up?
Police? Well, yeah. I don't know if we really had to call the police on anyone, but.
But do they show up and say, hey, we're looking for this such and such item that was stolen?
Yeah, I think they did do that a few times, yeah. Because I guess, yeah, it does attract some interesting people. Yeah, that was a good experience. And then kind of during this time, too, I was, like, really into piano. I met a really interesting teacher in high school when I was taking, like, violin lessons. The teacher's daughter was a student of this teacher. And so I went on like four different trips to like New Zealand and to Thailand, Southeast Asia area, and one like Mexico, Costa Rica, and then another one, New York and Canada. And so these were like classical concerts.
Where you are the attraction. You're the coming attraction that people come and pay to see and listen to.
Right. There's a group of students that each year it's kind of just whoever has the pieces prepared for it. So, yeah, I'd perform some classical piece. And there was also like church fireside like arrangements that we performed at like churches as well. Yeah.
What was your favorite one? Does one stick out as like, that was a really cool experience?
Yeah, I think the New Zealand trip, that was my first trip. That was like really magical for me because I was like just so entranced by the music and just the whole experience of it all. You know, everyone was so talented and, yeah, I just really loved the music and, yeah, pretty magical.
So would you get paid for these, or were you doing it to try to build your portfolio so you could go on and become a professional concert pianist?
No, these were mostly for the experience. Mm-hmm. Yeah, seeing the places, performing, just growing in that way. Some of his students do end up like using piano as a career. You know, they continue. Like I have a friend who's in New York. He was a student. He's super technically skillful. Just really, he could just learn a lot of notes really quickly on the piano and just perform them just like a robot, you know? So he's in New York, like, just studying. He's like, wants to do it as a career. And then Jared too is taking more longer than I did with continuing, like wanting to make a career out of piano, you know? So
you never thought of being a music major then?
Well, that was what I had it listed as at first, but then when I had like time to think about it, I was like, well, I love piano and I can always keep doing it on the side, so I'd rather approach something more practical, you know, because it's not really a career to be a classical pianist unless it's just like any other artistic domain, you know. You have to kind of make it, and it's not really a sure thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not really like huge demand for classical music. I mean, you'll go to concerts. I've gone to concerts with like my favorite pianist of all time. I've watched him on YouTube, and then it's not even like a packed concert hall. It's a lot of old people.
So you didn't see a career in it?
No, there's not really a career. I mean, if there is, but it's just you really got to be proactive and like know what you want to do. There's always teaching as like the stable income, you know, giving lessons or working at a school. And then you could be like an accompanist. There's a lot of little things you can do, but you kind of got to hustle and yeah.
It seems that that's the theme in everything, in making a career work, whether it's in medicine, whether it's in business, sports. You don't just have to be good at it. You have to understand the business aspect of it. And school doesn't teach you a lot of that. I know there's business school that teaches you. I haven't been to business school, so I would imagine they teach you how to negotiate and how to balance books and how to value certain trades and transactions. But the actual art of the deal, if you will, I'm not trying to steal Trump's phrase, but putting together something that other people find value in, and then doing that thing over and over again, where you can actually be satisfied in doing it and other people get value out of the service or product that you produce. That is the knack. That is something that I feel like we're missing in today's education. Have you found that in your quest to pursue your career?
Yeah, actually, I don't like school at all the way they do it.
Uh-huh.
I think my personality in particular is not built for school. I don't really like following rules. I always question why something is done a certain way, and if I can't see the reason why, then it's just, it's difficult for me to get myself to do it.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
And all throughout my school career, I'm like, this is pointless. I'm never going to use this. And yeah, I just felt like everything was a waste of time. It was extremely boring. Some people, they have a different experience. You know, they like school and that's fine. That's good for them, you know, because that is the system that we have. But yeah, I mean, this, like, the school system is kind of, it's like based on the Prussian model. I don't know if you know about that.
No.
Yeah, like people lobbied and very deliberately designed our school system to prepare us for like factory work, you know, the bell that rings in these each segmented times. You're all
I am familiar with that concept. Yes, I didn't realize it came from Prussia, but okay.
Yeah, it's like very.
Oh, Depression? Is that what you said?
No, Prussian model. Yeah.
Yeah, Prussian. Okay, like yeah, okay. Mm-hmm.
But that too, Depression.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. So. I think school should change completely, but we could get more into that later. But
well, tell me what you do now and how you got there, and looking back where you came from, what would you tell your younger self from the experience that you've gained and where you are at?
I don't know what I would have done. I mean, I still think if you're going to just give advice to someone generally, that going to college just makes sense. It's like, if you don't know what you're going to do, do that. Don't do nothing at all, or just mm-hmm. like waste your time.
Now, so, and that's pretty broad advice, and there's a lot of diversity in college as to what type of college, community college, Ivy League college. Do I take out, you know, a little bit of Pell Grants, or do I, or at least apply for Pell Grants that I don't have to pay back, and then do the school that will allow me to do, or do I go into infinite amount of debt? So
right, yeah,
those are all questions that come up with school. And it seems like up until, I don't know, even 10 years ago, the question about how much debt to go into for school really wasn't a pressing issue. It's like, if you're going to school, then the debt will be justified. And now we're starting to say, wait a minute, maybe not.
Right. No, I'd agree with that. Don't go into debt for school. I mean, if you have to, then that's another story. But, like, especially if you're not going for a degree that has a job, a specific job.
Like, waiting for you at the end of the...
Yeah, like, STEM fields are just... I mean, just look at, like, the people that find a job. Like, look at the stats. Like, which degrees get you a job after, and what salary can you expect? You know, go into it practically. And I think, like you said before, you don't really learn what kind of jobs are out there. In school, they don't teach you like how to find your career, you know, like they should.
So yeah, it seems like schools should be more of basically a very big organized job placement organization where they cater to the businesses that are thriving at the time and say, okay, business, what do you need? What type of skills in the workers that you are employing do you desire? And so we can cater to that. Instead, it's like, it's this rigid procedure, and business has moved well beyond, you know, just the factory method of building things, but the education program hasn't. So in what you do now, what do you do? What do you do as a career?
Yeah, so I'm a software developer. I work for an airline, and...
That's a far cry from the biology and the sciences that you were studying. Awesome. Yeah.
Yeah.
How did you get into that?
Well, I think I kind of defaulted to like more science and like medical because I was familiar with that type of career. Like my dad's a doctor, and then there's other people like family friends I knew that kind of went that route. So it made sense, but I wasn't really aware of what other practical options there were. And I just kind of was just on the internet, just like considering all my options and realized that, oh, I could be a software developer. And what really was exciting to me was the idea that I could do, that I could circumvent the traditional school system. So I was looking at like coding boot camps. They have like a technical short program, you know, they vary in length, but mine was like 10 months of job specific training. You know, it's like exactly what you said you wish that was more mainstream. It was just like everything that you learn is like completely relevant to what you're going to be doing on a day-to-day basis.
Coming up, more thought-provoking conversations on life, death, and the law right after this.
Truckmates, Yuma's Fix Up Your Pickup Truck Store is Yuma's home for Snugtop shells and lids. Snugtop, designed and manufactured to the highest standard. Industry-leading quality and trend-setting design to protect and complement your vehicle. That's Snugtop. Truckmates is also the home of expert spray and bed liners, spraying mil-spec protective coatings, committed to unwavering excellence and unparalleled customer service. Expert liners, with available national warranty coverage and installed by Yuma's most experienced spray-on team at Truckmates. Truckmates is also the home for BDS suspensions, the highest quality aftermarket suspension lift kits, leveling kits, and accessories for 4x4 off-road trucks and Jeep enthusiasts. And don't forget 3M window tinting, the originators of window tinting with nationwide lifetime warranty at Truckmates. That's expert spray and bed liners, BDS suspensions, 3M window tinting, and Snug Top, all at Truckmates. 32nd Street, next to Lowe's.
You're listening to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by Deason, Garner, and Hanson, the law firm that has been voted Yuma's best 6 years in a row.
And so I chose a program, and it was like self-paced, and you could just do it completely remotely as well. So like there's like different like modules you complete, and you could see your progress at the top, and then you're like, okay, I'm this many days ahead on schedule, whatever. You know, so you can just fly through it if you're just quick and you want to get it done. And that one too, you could have three, you could do multiple boot camps within the allotted time, basically. So I was like, okay, I'm going to do as many boot camps as I can during the time period, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you worked during these boot camps, or did you focus exclusively on that as your school and you're a full-time student?
Yeah, for the first part of it, I was working, but then like halfway through, I was just like, I'm just going to focus on this. And since it's self-paced, like I think that type of program could work for most people with any type of schedule, really, you know.
Do you end up with some sort of like a certificate or something? Or
yeah, just like a certificate. It's not like a bachelor's degree or anything, but yeah, the tech field, like software development, it's becoming more common for people to not have like a bachelor's degree in computer science or whatever. They'll have boot camp, like computer science, like a degree, is kind of proof that you can like do your homework and like follow kind of pointless rules for a while. And then, you know, you have some level of grit if you can complete a college degree, but that doesn't mean you like know any of the day-to-day skills, you know?
Right.
So it is like, some people do them like in combination. They'll get a degree and then the boot camp because the boot camp teaches what the job is. But yeah, they prepare you for the job. And like also some programs like have like job placement. They're like, okay, this is how you set up your resume. This is what you should expect and that kind of thing.
Oh, so that's even like more relevant and right there into the transitioning into the career. I suppose that makes sense not only for their students, but for their own success, when they can say, people that come to our boot camps, here's where they've ended up. We've placed them in these, you know, large corporations. They're doing well, and so it bodes well for their advertising for future students. But not only that, but it really gets down to the meat of it all, and that's you're going there to acquire a skill that you're going to perform in the workplace, and combining the education with the actual job seems to be, I don't know, some step we skipped over somehow in the education field, and they're putting that together again.
Yeah, the idea that you're just going to learn general knowledge and then like somehow find your job. I don't really know if that's the best way, you know. And you shouldn't really, like, in school, you should be able to learn what you find interesting, you know. You should be able to, like, have a self-based curriculum, you know. There should be, like, still some general requirements, but... So I like the boot camp. The tech field is more competitive right now. I think I got in at a good time. There were a lot more jobs a few years ago. It could still work, but yeah, it just takes patience and determination to find a job.
So do you have an office that you go to that you drive to every morning, check in at 9 o'clock, check out at 5 o'clock, or how? What's your work schedule look like, and what are your daily activities?
Yeah, so I work a hybrid schedule. So Monday and Friday, I work at home, and then Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, I'm in the office. So like every week we have a couple of regular meetings in the morning. Like we have Scrum, which is essentially, what did you do last week? What are you going to do this week? Do you have any problems?
Is that an acronym?
Yeah, I can't remember what it stands for. Well, it's like, yeah, just kind of, it's a very common thing in the tech field, like Scrum. This is where you meet every week and you just kind of catch everyone up on everything, basically.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's, have that meeting, and then at my company, you're kind of given a user story, which is essentially just like a task, and that has a certain set of like requirements that will determine if it's done. And so throughout the week, yeah, you just work on it by yourself, or if it's like a group project, you'll be collaborating and working. And so that working is like you're just sitting at your computer coding, or it's just all computer-based. And some of it, like not all of it's writing code specifically, but it's like changing configuration or like deploying things or like just like testing things, seeing how things work.
So can you give me an example that, I don't know anything about coding, I don't know how the programs work behind the scene, what... I, as a customer, would approach somebody that your company or you individually and say, this is what I want. How would I communicate that to you? And how would you go about producing the end product?
Yeah, so the application we work on, it's an employee-facing application. It's the ticketing and gate agent app. So it's like when you go to the gate agent, like, oh, I need a check-in, or show me the availability for this week or whatever. It kind of just it does pretty much everything that you would need an agent to do. Most of the work that we do, it comes from feedback from those agents, or it comes through our product owner. So she kind of represents the business aspect, and she'll help us prioritize what we want to work on. Or like our team used to be like much bigger. We used to have like four times as many people before I came. And so there's, like, always new work that we're doing, you know?
How big is your team?
We have, like, 10 people.
Okay.
Yeah. And a lot of the work is, like, legacy. Like, the application is very old in some parts, but then a lot of the work that we do is, like, modernizing it and, like, preparing for, like, the next stage of what technology looks like at the airport, you know? So kind of moving in a lot of different directions at once with that. And a lot of the work is like, because it is an existing application, you might think that there's like not a lot of changes since it works, which can be true. But then there's also so many things that are changing, like with like regulations and like requirements. Different company or countries will have different requirements, like, oh, we can't have this feature because it's like allowed in this country, or some weird thing that some specific case in some country is causing some type of bug, and so we need to fix that. And then also there's like new features that we add, like chain of custody for like unaccompanied minors. If you're dropping a kid off at the airport and then they go by themselves, they need to like chain of custody with different agents and then flight attendants. So then we move that from like a paper trail to like in the app. Just like a digital version of that. That's just an example of like something that we'd add.
So for each station that child goes through, the adult that they're accompanied by can be identified in the app. And so they can, you know, at any time be I suppose, contacted and their whereabouts are known because the apps that you're designing to help track them. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Right, yeah. You have to know who's picking them up. You have to know who had them last, and you have to track just every transaction there, basically.
And so you probably didn't see yourself doing this when you were 18 years old or even 19 years old. How old were you when you said, okay, I like this. This is what I'm getting into. Give me just a brief timeline as to how this progressed to the point where you're at today.
Yeah, I mean, 18 through 22, I was kind of changing majors a few times and then doing these different jobs. And then, like, yeah, 22, I was like, realized it was a possibility doing a boot camp. I might like coding. It's kind of interesting. And then 23, I did the boot camp, and that was less than a year. And I forgot to mention, I got hired at the boot camp after that, like after I was finished as a student there. So I was an instructor for a while, for 6 months.
Okay, for the organization that puts on the boot camp, which is this private company that just says, we know how to train kids to do stuff that these tech companies need.
Right, yeah. So I was working there. That was nice, as like I didn't really have a period of time where I was like without a job looking. So I was just working there for 6 months and then got hired at American Airlines. And then I've been here for like 2.5 years now. So
you're working for American Airlines as a coder for the programs that they need. And as their needs change, you kind of evolve and you're flexible provide whatever it is that they require for their standards or even government requirements for their computer programming. How would you rate your satisfaction in your career on a scale from 1 to 10? Like, do you go home feeling like, yeah, that was satisfying, or is it just sucking the lifeblood out of you?
it's good. Like, I'd say like 7.
Okay.
Yeah, because it's good work-life balance. There's always something to work on. And it's just using your brain to solve problems. And my team is really chill. Like, they're all easy to work with, and I think that makes a huge difference. I think I didn't realize how coding was actually kind of a good career for me because of my personality. I think one of the most important things, if you're going to be a software developer or work in tech or maybe just a lot of office jobs, is you need to be able to sit in front of a computer for like most of the day, which just sounds obvious, but I think there are some people that they just really can't stand that. Like, they really hate that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, growing up playing video games and being in front of the computer, it's like, that's just what I've been doing. I'm very used to that, you know, so like somewhat introverted personality.
But if somebody told you when you were 16, hey, in order to make a living, we're going to need you to sit in front of a computer for 8 to 10 hours a day and do exactly what we tell you to do, which is this very intricate kind of foreign language of computer coding. How would that have played off as a 16-year-old if somebody told you that compared to what you actually feel and what you actually experience today?
Well, coding, I think, can appeal to people in different ways. Some people are very much systematizers. They're thing-oriented people. Like, they're kind of like, being an engineer is kind of a personality trait in and of itself. If you like building things, if you like problem solving, just working with computers in general, if you enjoy doing that, then I think you can find kind of like intrinsic enjoyment in that kind of work.
So what's the most satisfying part about your job? What do you enjoy, or the combination of things, whether it's the schedule or the work atmosphere or the actual work of the coding, the compensation? What is it that keeps you going back to work every day? Because you've established pretty clearly that you're a person that's willing to change direction if it's not a path that suits you. But I don't know. You haven't mentioned that you're looking for a new career. So what keeps you going back to this job?
Well, personally, I have somewhat of a creative personality. And I like coding because it's a set of skills that I can use for my own personal project or own business ideas or anything like that. So, you know, I like making games and like little apps and stuff like that. There are different, my job is very corporate. It's a very big company.
Mm-hmm.
So there are downsides to that. You know, there's a lot of just rules and stuff you have to follow, and you don't necessarily see like the big picture of everything that you're doing.
If you could, do you think you could get more of the creative juices flowing and actually produce more for the company if they would allow you to see more of what's going on in the end game?
Yeah, and I mean, that is like something I could do. Like there, you know, if I stayed within the company, I could look at different positions and I could work towards that. So I think that is a good thing that some people opt to do because it is pretty stable. And as you build credibility within the company, like you're just, and your domain knowledge just builds on itself. So you like, if you're working on one team, then the next team you go on, you like have that specific knowledge from that other team that you had. But then there's also different coding jobs. Like startups are much more fast paced. They could have crunch time where you're working like just a lot long hours.
What's long hours to you?
Well, I haven't experienced a startup, so I don't really know. Uh-huh. I work 9 to 5, so I work 40 hours.
So you do work a typical 9 to 5.
Right, yeah.
Time period. So you don't just, when you're working at home, you don't get to do it in the middle of the night or whenever it suits you. You need to be on the computer at the time that the team is.
Well, to an extent, yeah. Right. There are kind of core hours, like 9 to 2, where you need to always be working or just available. But then you can, it's like a work from home day, then you can work your own hours for the remaining time, the other couple hours, basically.
Coming up, more thought-provoking conversations on life, death, and the law right after this.
Thanks to your support, the nonprofits VetTix and FirstTix have given away tens of millions of tickets and counting to vets currently serving military, the immediate family of troops killed in action, and our brave current and former first responders. These tickets are a meaningful way to say thank you to America's heroes. And now, we want you to be part of the mission. Got extra tickets to concerts, games, or special events? Or want to see if you qualify? We want you to go to vettix.org and firsttix.org today. Give something to those who gave.
If you're the owner and or operator of a local business and want to continue to hear the right talk, please consider advertising on KBLU. Your advertising dollars are the gasoline for the Clark, Kilmeade, Hannity, Beck engine. Without your support, the old 560 just won't roll. Reach out to like-minded folks, the patriots listening to this legendary radio station. When you do, you can invite new customers in and remind regulars to visit more often. And most importantly, keep the programming you love on 560 KBLU. Reduce your inflation exasperation now at Cars and Carts. No huge cost increases here. The manufacturer of Evolution Golf Carts has authorized significant price reductions on all new Evolution Golf Carts, including the awesome new D5 model with a new sleek front-end design, front rear disc brakes, new chassis design with a 7-foot wheelbase, tilted steering wheel, and updated touchscreen display. This golf cart is nice. And now at insanely low prices. Cars and Carts, the place to go. Call today, 928-726-2286. Cars and Carts, 2899 South Sherry Avenue in Yuma.
What is your healing power? Maybe your healing power is helping veterans with PTSD, traumatic brain injuries, depression, anxiety, or loneliness. Is your healing power a simple, heartfelt letter or being a volunteer? It is estimated that over 500,000 current warfighters will return from service diagnosed with PTSD, and 22 veterans will commit suicide every day. Our veterans have paid the ultimate sacrifice for our country. At HealVets.org, you can find out more about the healing power of pen pals, volunteers, therapy kits, and more. Discover your healing power at HealVets.org. Help Heal Veterans, together with you, has been helping one recovering veteran at a time. We are helping veterans heal together. What is your healing power? To find out about your power, visit HealVets.org. This PSA is sponsored by Help Heal Veterans.
You're listening to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by Deason, Garner, and Hanson, the law firm that has been voted Yuma's best 6 years in a row.
You get paid by the hour or salary or the project, or how does that work?
It's salary.
Uh-huh. So as long as as long as you're keeping up with the work, then your salary is going to be set and you're good. If you're not, they're going to come back and say, you need to pick it up a little bit. Otherwise, we're going to look a different direction, right?
Right, yeah. That's the thing with software. You don't always know how long something is going to take. Sometimes it'll be like, oh, this will be really easy, and then you just get stuck, and then you're working on it for months type of thing.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, you got to learn how to gauge how much work. That's why you go week by week. Like, okay, this week I completed this, but this part is taking longer than I expected for so-and-so reasons. So
I'm curious. So we got for the people that are listening to this on podcast that can't see us here, Jeff, your dad is sitting right next to you, and he's a successful career orthodontist, and he is one of those guys that you go to when you need advice about life, right? I go to him when I'm like, okay, now this is getting tricky. Let's think outside the box. And you seem to be one of those that plans and enjoys planning and having everything kind of laid out. So when you've watched Carson go through this path, how did it strike you? Were you really anxious, or were you just like, oh, that's kind of cool that he's doing it? You knew that he'd land on his feet. What was your experience?
You know, Carson's always had grit, and he's always been smart, and he's always plotted his own path. And so in that sense, I'm like, he's going to figure this out at some point. But I felt like all of my kids at a minimum would go through and get a college degree, because that's what I just anticipated was a factor in success. And when that wasn't what was happening, I did have some question, like, you know, how is this going to play out? And I didn't understand why he wasn't able to do the things that didn't make sense to get a means to an end. Like, you don't really love this course in school, but it's part of the process to get where you want to go. Because in my particular job, I have a particular set of skills, and but to get there, I had to do a lot of stuff that was, looking back, I don't
totally
say
irrelevant. Pointless,
but
right?
I don't do root canals and dentures and fillings, and I don't, you know, need to know quite all the stuff involved. And then just even to get to dental school was its own chore, and I knew that all along. These were things that I was not going to be doing, but it was okay because it was the path that I needed to take to get to where I wanted to go. And so it's just what you do. And so when Carson's like, this doesn't make sense to me. And even in high school, he's like, this is stupid. Why am I doing this? Well, you need to do these things to get these, markers. And so I was a little bit questioning, how is this going to work? But that's because I was with the old technologies. You know, when you were younger, you didn't have access to the information that you have now. You can be a self-learner on YouTube. You can learn almost anything for free.
Yeah.
And I didn't have access to that as a young person. And now you do. And he's found his own way. So, you know, I'm very proud of him, because it's like Frank Sinatra. I did it my way. I didn't listen to the norm. I did what I felt, what resonated with me and what was working for me. And not everybody is able to do that. They don't have the grit, or they don't have that strong will. And those are the things I knew would help him find success. I just didn't realize it would be this non-traditional path. And so I'm really proud of him, because I've seen him become something that wasn't necessarily possible, what I thought possible.
So he struggled a little bit thinking about what he would say to his younger self, knowing what he knows now. What would you say to his younger self, knowing what you know now about him? Like, how would you parent him differently? So giving advice to the parents out there now that are, you know, facing the same thing. This is a Gen Z issue, sure. Right?
Yeah,
they're non-compliant.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I don't know how much of the kids are perceptive, so he might have sensed my angst or my concern or my lack of faith in him. I suppose if he picked up on that, I'm sorry about that. I wish I would have had more faith in that process. And so what I maybe wish I would have done...
What does that mean to have more faith in the process? Just believe it, or to tell him different things, or to encourage him different ways?
Yeah, maybe to... to support him, to always say I'm proud of him. And it's not that I ever really said, I'm very disappointed in what you're doing, but he could probably sense that I was like, man, what's happening? What's he doing with his life?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, now it as I recognize, it's all part of what has worked for him and should have had a little bit here. This is going to be great. This is going to be fine. You'll find your way.
This all sounds very progressive.
Mm-hmm.
And you, I know, are conservative.
Uh-huh.
And so it strikes me as kind of a conundrum. We're talking about a progressive way of going about finding a career and embracing this Gen Z ideology that you got to find what you love.
Mm-hmm.
But you and I both have gone through that school of, you know, rigorous study, much of which has nothing to do with the daily practice mm-hmm. of what we're doing in our career, and have found success in doing that. And then preaching contrary. So how do you make those two ends match? I'm actually at a loss here.
Yeah, I'm kind of the same. I mean, I don't really know the answer to that question. I think my mind is very traditional, conservative. So I don't know. I don't have good advice for that question.
Carson, where do you see yourself in 2, 5, 10 years? Start at those increments.
Okay. Well, you know, for now, I'm comfortable where I'm at. I like where I'm working and continuing to learn. And
you live in Phoenix.
Yeah. Well, I should say my job, I like it. It's stable. I'm still learning a lot. But maybe in the 5-year time span, I'm interested in possibly remote work. I don't know necessarily where I want to end up. I like Arizona. I'm used to it. But I'm open to other places I could live. You know, I miss, I love green, and I'd love to just like live on the East Coast or something, or, you know, maybe try living in California or somewhere else. And if I had a remote job, then I could try out living in other places, you know, as opposed to finding work in a place and then being stuck there. I do have like flight benefits, so I like can kind of sample different places, but you can't really like know what it's like to be there long term.
Yeah, because you get the tourist version of the places that you go when you fly in for a week or so.
Right, which is fine. It's convenient. And
uh-huh.
And then 10 years, hopefully I'm starting a family or, you know, doing, I think, more work on, like, I'd love to work for myself one day, you know, have my own business. And luckily the skills that I use in my day-to-day are useful for building my own website or a project or whatever. So
who would you say is somebody that you look at as like an icon or a mentor, someone that like they did something amazing? I want to do something like that. Of course, I can't do what they did because they were a pioneer in their field, but I want to do something like that. Is it a Steve Jobs? Is it an Elon Musk? Is it a, who is it for you?
Yeah, I definitely admire those people. I don't have like someone specific in mind. I think partially because it's part of my personality to just kind of go my own very specific way. I have a lot of random ideas and interests that are all kind of creative, and I'd love to combine them in my own way, you know. I, you know, like we said, question a lot of the way things are done traditionally and all in all these different institutions and society, and there's a lot of potential for improvement. You know, I can make an impact on the world in a positive way that's also an outlet for my creative interests. So it would definitely be something, you know, I don't have a specific role model, but it would be entrepreneurial and creative and that type of path, basically.
So Adam's been sitting here, but he is really into computer technology, software. It seems to me that he is basically a computer guy that is a lawyer for a living, but really computers is his passion. So where do you see computers and this whole realm, and what strikes you about the course that Carson has taken, and what you might advise your kids or how you could give them advice as to similar paths? Based on what you know about the technology and where it's going.
I wouldn't say that I'm a computer person, but I think when I hear coding and this program that you went through, I think that's fantastic. I think we're starting to see changes in that field with AI, obviously. So ChatGPT can do most coding now, and then you've got other AI programs that can do coding, right? So do you see yourself kind of in the crosshairs of technology, specifically AI, being able to do a lot of those things? I'll give you an example. So we had a coder create a program for us a few years ago, right?
Yeah, I think we started like 10 years ago, and we kept working on that same program, and then it finally worked maybe 3 years ago.
Yeah, and so I used like a marketplace for people that can get things done for you called Upwork. Have you ever heard of that?
Yeah.
So you can be like a freelancer there. And so I went to Upwork and you put in your project. We want this software to do this, blah, 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 blah. It's kind of like a Google app. It was a Google app script at the time, I believe. And so we just needed that simple little thing plugged into our Google Sheets. So I posted this thing and they come out of the woodworks, these freelancers. And we get this guy out of Brooklyn. We hire him to do this project. We pay him overtime. I think we dumped probably like, I don't know, maybe $1,500 into this whole project to get the thing done. And it worked, you know, for a time. But then it would break every once in a while. And so I'd have to email him. And now our contract is done through Upwork. You know, he did the work and then it's over. So I'd be like, hey, how do we do this, that, or the other? And you could tell he was annoyed because now we're out of like the work scope kind of, but at the same time, he's the one that designed it. And so it became very challenging. It's like, what do I do? Like you designed the program and know the ins and outs of it, but yet it's broken. So just recently, probably like 6 months ago, it finally broke again. Like in a way that it's like, I don't know, you know? And so I email him and I'm like, hey, this happened again, you know? What can we do about this? So what I did was like, well, this dude, we need to get this up and running. So I went to ChatGPT. I copy pasted the app script coding, you know, in there. And I said, this is what's happening. And it's like, oh, you just have to do this. And I'm like, oh, okay. So I just follow. I'm like, give it to me as if I'm a 4-year-old by steps. And it's like, right. Boop, 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 boop. And I just I'm like, okay, it took me about 5 minutes to do what ChatGPT told me to do and fix the issue. And for all time now, like in perpetuity, this issue will never come back that we've been struggling with for a while, for years, yeah. You know? And so the guy was like, kind of, I was still in conversation with him. And then, so I'm like, and then he's getting kind of like, I don't know, just very abrasive. And I'm like, never mind. I fixed it with AI. And then he just blocked me.
Wow.
I'm like, whatever, you know, like, yeah. I don't need you anymore. I've got ChatGPT or Gemini, whatever, you know. So I'm not saying that you're obsolete, but I'm saying, and I've seen this, you know, going back to YouTube, like your dad said, you know, I do watch a lot of YouTube, especially in this realm. I'm trying to build a database for our firm right now. And so I'm using ChatGPT, I'm using Claude, I'm using all sorts of different AI for different purposes of coding and building in, you know, like calls and stuff from different apps that are connecting in.
Yeah.
The goal is to use agentic employees, essentially. So building an AI bot or several of them that can answer our phones and answer questions using my database. And then with our specific like training, if you will, how we do things within the firm. So I've been building that on the back end, plugging it, trying to build it into this database. So I'm using different AI programs to do that. And it's not perfect by any means, but at the same time, it really takes a lot of the work out of what I would have had to go to Upwork and get a freelancer to do.
Right.
And just do. The problem is I don't know if it's right or wrong. So maybe that's where it is. You know, you as a coder can go in and see, oh, I can see right where this is wrong, where I don't. Like I'll put stuff in. It's like error. I'll copy paste that error back into ChatGPT.
Really?
And it's like, oh,
that's wild.
This is why there's an error. You need. I'll update the script for you. Is that okay? Yeah, sure. Please do that. And I copy paste that back. So you just go back and forth, back and forth. But you as a coder, I guess, is where the value is. It's like, oh, I can see right away where I need to build in some back systems. Would that be an accurate?
Yeah. So obviously AI is incredibly useful. Like I use it for my job every day, pretty much. It's just useful in general as like a learning tool beyond coding and engineering. And yeah, I use it all the time in my like personal life when I'm just like, as the replacement for Google, you know, you can have a back and forth with it.
Absolutely.
As far as like what it means for the tech sector or like the future of jobs or something like that, I think like you mentioned that it enabled you to fix these things. Well, I would argue that it was actually not that hard to begin with.
Yeah.
It just kind of gave you the confidence to get in there, you know. It does make learning more, much more accessible. And yeah, I think, you know, people have been saying like, oh, now it's like a great time to be the idea guy because now you could just like use AI to build any idea you want. But turns out there's a lot of idea guys not making any apps because turns out it takes effort still, you know. And to build anything, you can really build anything you want already even before AI. I mean, you can just go on a tutorial on YouTube or, you know, the information is there available. And that is what the AI is. It is just kind of a distillation of all the information that's on the internet. So I think there will be some big shifts in tech, of course. That's the nature of the career, you know. Technology didn't look anything like it did today, 20 years ago. So if you like to learn and you're good at learning, then yeah, that's what you're in store for in the career, you know? Yeah, I'm mostly excited about AI because I have a lot of ideas and I'd love to just make it easier to do what I want to do, build what I want to build. So I think in general, I think it's not going to affect jobs, like people think, you know, you know, they talk about like AGI, like when is AGI, general intelligence AI, going to come out? Really what makes humans useful is our general ability to problem solve and understand things. So I think AI, at least for the next, you know, 10 years, is mostly going to be a useful tool used by smart people, you know. Mm-hmm. So.
Like you. Thank you.
Thanks for coming in.
Take care.
If you have questions or want to know more about something that was discussed today, please call the law firm of Deason, Garner & Hanson at 928-783-4575 or visit YumaEstatePlanning.com.
Wildlife around the globe needs help. And when you help protect them, you become a friend of the San Diego Zoo Wildlife Alliance, a real friend, the kind of friend you want to thank. And not just with a card or a text, but with a song.
Thank you for being a friend.
Travel down the road and back again.
Your heart is true, you're a pal and a confidant.
Thank you for being a friend. Thank you for being a friend.
From your friends at the San Diego Zoo Wildlife Alliance, thank you for helping protect wildlife around the globe. Without you, there's no them. Learn more at sdzwa.org/friend.
Thank you for being a friend.
Bright Focus Foundation's Alzheimer's Disease Research Program is paving the way for a cure. Learn about symptoms, diagnosis, and breakthrough research at brightfocus.org or call us at 1-855-345-6237 for free resources.
Eldorado Broadcasters and this station congratulates the newest Yuma County Chamber of Commerce members.
Pilot Travel Center, Coronado Hotel, Mishimosa LLC, and NextCare Urgent Care.
If you'd like to find out how you can become a member and enjoy all the benefits that membership brings, email Anna at yumachamber.org. That's Anna at yumachamber.org. Or call 928-782-2567.
The preceding show on 560 KBLU was a paid program. All opinions expressed by the program participants are solely their current opinions and do not reflect the opinions of 560 KBLU, Eldorado Broadcasters LLC, their respective parent companies or affiliates, or the companies with which the program participants are affiliated and may have been previously disseminated by them. The program participants' opinions are based upon information they consider reliable, but neither 560 KBLU, El Dorado Broadcasters LLC, nor its affiliates, nor the companies with which such participants are affiliated, warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such.
This is News Talk 560 KBLU, Yuma.